Blog Talk Radio.
Thank y'all very much for listening to us. It's been a pleasure to play for you. Thank you so much. On the guitar and some of the vocals, Mr. Gintrow on the guitar and the vocals. On the bass and some of the vocals, Mr. Keith Mosley. On the drums, the apartment QC58, Mr. Jeff Sykes.
Welcome to School Watch. This is Diane Lenning, your host, and we have an exciting program for you tonight. My friends across the nation and around the world, you want to hear this interview tonight with James Dante Wood, also known as Jim Wood, who is a physicist and Minuteman founder as well as director of the Border Fence Project, who raised $2.5 million to build fencing and place cameras on the U.S.-Mexican border. That's just phenomenal, isn't it? Jim developed a surgically implantable antenna patents for remote telemetry of homing devices with vital sign data. That sounds kind of high-level thinking, but I'm going to ask the questions tonight so we can all understand. As well as along with solar-powered hidden cameras designed to support the Minuteman Project. He's also author of The Anarchist Manifesto, which you can find at Amazon.com. Jim explains about the inevitable collapse of government and the political, religious, science, social science, business implications of if this occurs. For information, look for Jim's book, The Anarchist Manifesto, on Amazon.com. And his website is http www.taxwars.us. To contact Jim, you can email him at jimwood72064@gmail.com. Again, that's jimwood72064@gmail.com. To contact me, you can email me at diane@lenning.com. The interview will be available 24/7 for your resource at www.blogtalkradio.com/Diane-Lenning. You may post it to Facebook and share there as well as in your email. So I plan to post that URL tonight after the show on my Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/Diane-Lenning. So that should be available for your information. And we are so grateful, before we bring Jim in, so grateful for his work that he's doing, and we're happy to be able to talk with him tonight and give others the opportunity to hear about it, as well as call in at our toll-free number after the interview if you'd like. The toll-free number is 1-877-497-9937. Again, that number is 1-877-497-9937. We hope you will call in and ask him your questions. Now, I know you're excited, Jim, about sharing your book, which we will get to, but we'd like to start, when we bring Jim on tonight, with talking about the Minuteman Project Building the Fence. And I have talked to him on the phone before, so he said that was okay. We can stay on tonight as long as we would like, so we hope that works for everyone. And let's click in Jim and say hello. It's not connected yet. Sometimes, you know, we've had difficulty with this today, but I'm so glad to be able to get it going. And there we go. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me.
We are so happy to have you, and really privileged, and it's an honor to hear from someone who has raised so much money to help with such an important security issue for our nation, to help build a fence. And perhaps you could start with telling us the status of that fence and what you have or haven't done, what you plan to do, and your website and contact information if people would still like to donate to that. Okay, go ahead.
Sure. I have not been to the border since March of 2010, because I fought cancer for a number of years and won, defeated cancer, but had to kind of struggle with the symptoms for a long time where I couldn't work on the project. For the most part, the donations died off where we didn't have the money we needed to build more fencing. We did raise $2.5 million for the border fence project collectively between Semcox and I. Yeah, Chris Semcox, he was Minuteman Fence. So we were Declaration Alliance collectively, and we raised, about $5 or $6 million total. Most of our success was forcing the government to do more immigration law enforcement and pass the Security Fence Act, where we had no idea that they built some fencing. I have no idea how much. But the main purpose was to embarrass the government to fencing the border themselves. Knowing how this government works, I think they're determined to keep that border wide open at all costs and pass blanket amnesty. So this is like a lot of issues where only civilians can enforce the law when it comes to abject failure to secure the border. The problem has gotten better. That's one reason we don't get the donations we normally get. It's the kind of thing where the Mexican economy got better, our economy got worse. So not as many come here. The ones that do come here often come here for social services, but those services are dying out. So in many ways, it's, the issue is not as urgent as it used to be, but we know that there's still about 1.5 million a year that cross that border. We think there were 10 million a year that crossed the border illegally between 2003-2005. And in 2005, a number of us Minutemen were attacked by left-wing hooligans in a place called Campo, about 60 miles east of San Diego, and for a number of reasons, it led to a complicated chain reaction of events where, for a number of reasons, according to census data, the problem got a lot better. Ideally, you want to secure that border. It's kind of, to me, it's kind of naive to think that you have people in vehicles that patrol back and forth intercepting people. That's going to make much of a difference. Obviously, you want a physical barrier with cameras, and then maybe combine that with a manned presence to intercept those that cut through or climb over the ladder. It's a much cheaper, better solution than what we have. It's believed that about 20% of the people that cross that border have violent felonies on the record. 70% have criminal records. But my biggest concern about illegal immigration is the crime, because they do commit the highest crime rate of any social group in the country. That's when I was more of a small government libertarian, I used to say, well, I don't like the fact that they undermine our wages, steal our social services, and commit crimes. Now that I'm this guy that wants to privatize everything the government does and say, the hell of the government, I say, well, technically I'm just concerned about the crime. So if this becomes a hotbed issue again, like let's say the economy heats up and many more come here, then ideally you want to fence off that border. Most of the border has a cattle fence about 6 feet high, and all we did was reinforce both north and south perimeter with fabric, chain link, and put up solar-powered cameras that would upload camera views to the Internet. We did catch people with solar-powered cameras.
Well, Jim, first of all, we are so glad that you beat cancer. Thankful for that. And secondly, I was down to that place you mentioned. I think you said Campo. When I ran for Congress in L.A. County, I went to the border with a friend, Maria, and we took videos. And we showed where the fence was so inadequate. It was like some rail ties from an old railroad track, and yet it wasn't completely filled in. It just had like a bottom beam across the bottom and 1 6-foot across the top, and all you had to do was just step over the bottom beam and come into that. So after we did that, I heard that they built a fence there, and so that helped as far as California. But, you know, my main concern is that we slow the flow. And I keep hearing people say, well, building the fence isn't going to solve the problem. But I believe it's going to go a long way to slow the flow, to help the Border Patrol to deal with those who still get through. And I do believe that the fence is step one, and that step two, we will probably need security and visual technology, some of which you can tell us about tonight.
Yeah, what happened was the first major attempt to fence the border was about 30 miles in West San Diego County. They put up a double fence, 12-foot high chain link fence. It's about 99% effective. So it's idiotic to say fences don't work. So what happens is you can easily create a barrier that's impossible under, through, over, or around. For about $200 million, you can go 2,000 miles, and we spend $40, $50 billion a year on Homeland Security. So the reason why government does it, they want the problems to get worse. That's why, I mean, politicians compete for votes and cheap labor. They want us dependent on social services, criminal justice system. So they're not serious about fencing off the border. Like, when you give the example of rail ties, that's what they do. They put up fences that collapse in the wind. They build, like, vehicle barriers and staircases so they can climb over it. They put up vehicle barriers that are 3 feet high. They're determined to let the people in. So the modus operandi of government is to make the problem worse. Only civilians can really secure that border. We have two websites, fencewars.tv for physical barriers and fencekit.net for solar-powered cameras. If people want to donate, or even if they want to, like, advertise on those websites, spend money advertising on those websites, much of the money goes to the cause. In time, I think collectively a group of nonprofits, and it's been a minute, we were a number of nonprofit organizations, we can probably raise the money to build a series of 6 foot high double barriers on the border that will probably be 95 to 99% effective. And if they still get through them, between militias, neighborhood watch programs, and solar powered cameras, you can probably be almost 100% effective. It'd be a lot better, but this government's going to do whatever it takes to make it worse. But we know their motivation. The Bush administration, the Obama administration, all they do is talk amnesty. That's all they do. So we know that we're really fighting our own government more than we're fighting the illegal invader.
Well, to slow the flow or narrow the gaps, you mentioned that civilians can do a lot to protect the border. Can you tell us more specifically how civilians like myself and my friends could go help and actually protect the border?
It actually goes back to the 1800s, these vigilante groups that would actually work with, at the time they just used to work with law enforcement with a bunch of vigilante groups that would actually report people across the border, detain and deport. Now, what we largely did has been, we would just report people across the border, the Border Patrol. We created a neighborhood watch program of ranchers that would identify people crossing the border. Much of the problem right now is in Texas with the people coming from Central America. Much of the flow in California, Arizona has been stemmed. The pattern has been since the Clinton administration is that most of the illegal crossings, they gradually move east from California to Arizona to Texas. So eventually, it's like the Dutch boy with his finger in the dike. So eventually, it's all about bottlenecks. Where the problem with the combination of people and fencing, you have to have contiguous protection. And I think what will happen is with enough civilians, so we still have border watchers down there. Mostly what we did, our best success has been was organized a neighborhood watch program, and to some degree, when Border Patrol knows you're down there, they're forced to do their job, whereas before, and we still arrest Border Patrol agents and throw them in jail just for doing their job, and they don't want to, a lot of times they don't even want to intercept these people because they're threatened with jail time just for doing their job. It's all kinds of examples, and Barack Obama did the same thing as Obama, where he arrested innocent Border Patrol agents. So I think the physical barrier built by civilians is the only thing that's going to make a difference. You can start your own organization or donate to fencewars.tv, fencekit.net, advertise on those websites, and we'll raise enough money where, like in the case of the money we raised from Declaration of Life, I'm probably going to have to file a lawsuit against the consulting company because we never got all our money. Eventually, we will get a lot more money. The money's there. We didn't mature a house fund, which is the consulting companies tend to be a scam. What they did, they said 80% goes to cost, but they said you have to mature a house file, $40,000. Well, no, ideally, by law, they defrauded the donors unless we get all the money. So I may have to file a lawsuit against Diener in order to get my money.
Will you give us again that website? I didn't get it all. It was Fence Borders something?
Fence Wars, W-A-R-S, fencewars.tv and fencekit.net.
Fence Kit, like K-I-T?
K-I-T, yeah.
.net. Okay, those are some websites for you people to look up. FenceWars.tv and FenceKit.net. And do you have another website you'd like to say at this time where they've got their pencil moving?
As far as border security, those are the two. There are many other websites. When you go to these websites, they all have a link page. Go to the link page and you'll discover all the websites that are all linked together. The book, The Anarchist Manifesto, is largely a compilation of the home pages of the websites. But if you buy the book, The Anarchist Manifesto on Amazon, it does have information that's not in the websites. But for people that just want to go online right now and not buy the book, that's fine. You can go to the link page on either of those two websites and check out all my websites. I deal with many subjects. There's a website called startamilitia.org.
Bettermilitia.org? Okay.
Startamilitia.org. The theory is that, originally we were a militia where the goal was to just go to the border and invade and basically engage in a complicated dynamic where, for a number of reasons, mostly in assisting Border Patrol, we want to simply send a militia to the border. And I think militias in this country are most useful on the Mexican border. The guy that ran Blackwater, he was down there, and he's like me. He raised millions of dollars, and because military guys don't make much money, but when you privatize the government's responsibility, you can make a lot of money and make a big difference. So it's good for people to start a militia. In the case of California, I don't know. I think because what happened was the problem largely died down since 2005. Right now, we need people in Texas. I don't know exactly where it is where the most of the crossings occur. But what's happening is over time they gradually go east, and we largely, to some degree, between civilians and Border Patrol, we have ways of creating greater and greater border security.
Now, if people wanted to donate online right now, which website should they go to donate?
I would recommend, the two websites, fencewars.tv, fencekit.net, I would recommend those two. If you just want fabric for cattle fencing, where what we do is put 6 feet of fabric up on a double perimeter of cattle fencing, They can donate to Fence Wars, W-A-R-S, fencewars.tv. There's a way you can donate by PayPal. In the case of, they want solar-powered cameras as well. Fencekit.net, they can donate, but they can also, if they have websites that they want to advertise, I have really cheap advertising where I charge like 1.9 cents a click when you advertise. These websites will get major press releases starting October 10th. So what's going to happen is eventually the page rank of the website will go way up to where if you advertise on these websites, the way we raise money, we raise a lot of money selling advertising space and eventually also advertising space on my podcast, and that's how we raise money for the cause. Whereas we will use at least 80% of the donations, but some of the money I raise for, people want to advertise on those websites, will also be used to raise money for the cause.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I've heard Governor Rick Perry say something along this line in the past that he wasn't totally convinced that fencing would do it all, that they could do a lot with visual technology, et cetera. Do you think perhaps, I know we can't second guess him, but do you think people who've had that opinion have perhaps realized now that the fence is more important than they might have thought?
Yeah, Rick Perry's way off. The reason why he lost badly in the Republican race, he said fencing's not possible. Then I heard him again on Hannity the other day where he said it takes too long to put up a fence. It's not really true. Two individuals can put up about 800 feet of fencing a day. Team of a lot of people. Yeah, really. As one man, I could put up about 150 feet of fencing in an hour.
What if you took a bunch of people down there to do that? Would you be able to do it, or would there be great hurdles?
Yeah, I'd be kind of saying ideally, people want to be paid, and we want to pay people that have expertise in doing this. It takes the learning curve is about 40 hours to do it well. Basically, all you do is hog ring cattle fencing. All you do is hog ring chain link, 6 feet of chain link to the barbed wire on the cattle fencing. There's some lopping involved of some of the vegetation. To some degree, sometimes you have to you have to mend the barbed wire if it doesn't have it. Or put up cattle fencing if it doesn't previously exist. In much of Texas, they have no cattle fencing at all. You have to put up the cattle fence, the fabric, and it probably takes in one day you could get two people to put up at least 400 feet if there's no cattle fence, and 800 feet if there's a cattle fence. Just putting up fabric, it's very easy. In Campo, California, we had all kinds of cattle fencing. Where all I did, it took me about an hour with a come along. You stretch the fabric with a come along, do some lopping. Hog ring like every 5 feet, top and bottom of the fence to the barbed wire, and you're done. It's very simple work, and you can be very efficient and put up fencing very quickly.
Now, I'm just curious, and maybe some in the listening audience is curious as well, who owns all the property along the border? Is it mostly privately owned or federal land or what? Do you know?
So it's first of all federal land. Teddy Roosevelt, about 110 years ago, he started what he did. He declared that all 60 feet within the Canadian and Mexican borders is federal land called an international zone. And what Roosevelt's men did, they used mules to put up, it was pretty close to 2,000 miles of cattle fencing north and south perimeter. Some of it got torn down over time, but then Eisenhower's men, and maybe even recently, they resurrected it. So it's basically federal land. Even much of the land to the north is federal, mostly BLM land, and some of it's private ranch land. Over the years, they decided to cede some of the federal land to private ranchers in places like Texas. And one of the problems we had when we put up the fence is that there were private ranchers that did not want to comply with the feds when we wanted to put up a fence. Even the Bush administration wanted the fence off much of the border, and then private utility ranches, they're mostly utility companies, would not comply. The Texas ranchers want their cattle to basically be able to water at the Rio Grande River. So we did have obstacles. To some degree, you can fence around them. But for the most part, that's the biggest obstacle we had. There were private ranchers that would not comply.
Well, I'll tell you, this is really interesting, and we're looking forward to the rest of the interview, but I'm going to give the listening audience Jim's contact information, and then we'll take a break, and we'll be right back, so stay with us. But to reach Jim via email, it's jimwood072064@gmail.com, and his phone number is 949 264-6028. If you need to mail him information or request, his address, mailing address is 100, that's 100, Flor de Sol, that's F-L-O-R, space D-E, space S as in Sam, O-L, at Rancho Santa Margarita, California, 92688. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll listen to some music, and we'll be right back. It's going to get even better, I think. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Well, friends, tonight we are interviewing Jim Wood, founder of the Minutemen Project, and he's an engineer from Rancho Santa Margarita who designed the entertainment system for the Air Force One, and oh, that's just one of many on a long list, and TurboTax, the number two software package in the world. He's founder and executive director of the Border Fence Project, and he raised $2.5 million to fence off and install cameras on the Mexican border. He has a degree in physics from Cal Poly Pomona in 1987, and I'm sure he didn't know this, but I have a BA from Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, quite a few years for him. So that's an interesting connection. And he has a company, EDI, which is active in trying to quickly downsize government with tax audit insurance and tax loopholes. And that is at the website we've given before, www.taxwars.us. And he has other websites, as we've mentioned, and other foundations and charities to make possible the privatization of all services formerly done by the government. I'm going to be taking calls in line as they call in, even though we're not done with the interview. You might want to call in to get in line. The toll-free number is 1-877-497-9937. Again, that number is 1-877-497-9937. And again, I will take your calls as they come in, and we'll give you opportunity in just a few minutes to talk with Jim if you would like to. Now, I don't know how many got the news to even be able to call in, because I was just able to post all around Facebook about a half an hour before the show because of technical difficulties, which were unforeseen. So in just a minute here, we'll bring in Jim again, and let me turn the music off. That's off. All right, Jim. So I don't know if you heard what I just said about you, but you can jump in again, start talking a little bit more about your technological aspect of it and your book.
There are certain things about, I had a vision for technology that was somewhat realistic. People didn't think so years ago, and now it's all coming true, like the idea that we'd have solar-powered cameras everywhere. I knew this year about 20 years ago, and now much of the California freeway, you drive anywhere, you see a solar-powered camera with a Yagi antenna. And it's mostly the CHP trying to check on it. It's their way of just, you know, trying to patrol the highways. Of course, people worry about Big Brothers, invasion of privacy for people that, let's say, don't really do anything wrong, but I don't see anything nefarious about it, if at least to some degree of civilians, we monitor it. But we did the same thing. I put up solar-powered cameras on the border. I don't know if you remember Polly Klass. I wrote about her in the book. I was very active, and I was a Silicon Valley engineer when she was murdered. And I went to the Polly Klass Foundation. My angle was, how does high tech prevent crime from happening? That's about high tech to prevent crime. Or I knew about biometrics. I knew about facial recognition software. I knew about, there would come a day, and we're almost at that point, where you have chip implants in the body that read your vital signs, and with consent, because this is all done with consent, they know your location if you're like an abducted person, or if you want to be a certain race away from parolees that are in-house parolees that have chip implants of their own. So, you know, if you're a certain race away, and you can check it out on like an intelligent phone to see if there are any parolees in your neighborhood. I think that's where the future is going. I had this vision back in 1994, when I did this research. He was murdered in 1993. Dr. Daniel Mann, he actually invented the implantable homing device in 1987, so this was his vision as well, because he lived in Boca Raton, Florida, where Adam Walsh was killed. So the high-tech angle, yeah, it's mostly about how does high-tech do the government's job to where we can downsize government. That's really what it's about, where we don't need parole officers, we don't need as much imprisonment with people that have chip implants in their body, cameras everywhere, physical barriers, locked doors. Of course, we have a lot of guns right now, which I've always believed civilians' possession of guns is about the only thing that keeps the crime rate down. I keep an American flag outside my condo, because that means people are less likely to break in. They equate it to someone that has a gun in his house. But to some degree, crime is something where you have to be proactive, where it really is the civilians' responsibility. The cops can only be reactive, they can almost never be proactive. That's the problem. But yeah, this thing called Sprawl, self-powered remote audio video unit. I talk about it at both FenceWars.tv and FenceKit.net. But we actually put up a solar-powered camera that's hidden and covert. All it is a solar panel that powers a camera with a Yagi antenna that uploads by a repeater to the internet. We actually caught two people that way, where there were people on the internet that actually, and this was a long time ago, which with more primitive technology that actually caught people entering the country, and people were quite impressed by that. Glenn Spencer had something similar, but he had a much more expensive camera. We spent about $2,000 a unit. He would spend $10,000, and he got worried it would get stolen. But yeah, I mean, technology, you can do almost anything to reduce the crime rate and lessen the need for the public sector to do what they're supposed to do, because in many ways their most important responsibility is keeping the peace and reducing crime.
Now, you know, much like the refusal of government to build the fence, the government will probably refuse to downsize government. So we've got a solution for people here to build the fence, but what's a possible solution for people to downsize government?
It's basically downsizing itself right now. It has been, the feds have been losing tax revenue for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years now. California, we make about $30 billion a year less than we did back in 2008. Between the bad economy and lackluster tax enforcement, for the most part, they're already losing a lot of money. It's as simple as a lot of people don't pay taxes. Like, I never pay taxes, and I never get audited. And if you get audited, you're probably looking at tax relief with no penalties. If you go to the website taxwars.us, I talk about the six reasons why I think there will be free fall of tax revenues to where somehow we all go back to work in the private sector economy. One, to some degree, companies go overseas for lower taxes, like Burger King went to Canada, eBay, Google, Yahoo all went to Ireland. So to some degree, they go overseas physically, which causes us to lose tax revenues. Number two, 501Cs, 501C4s, like my organization, that do the government's job for them and pay no taxes. That's a big one. Number three, now this is a really big one that they don't talk about. I don't know why. Foreign merchant account providers. Now, if you process your credit, well, what that means is if you have a business where you process credit cards, which, of course, you know, most of their money, most of the government's money comes in from income tax and what's the other one? Corporate tax. That's like 80-90% of what they bring in. Well, if you have a foreign merchant account provider, that just means you use the Internet to call somebody in Canada to process your credit cards. It's done over the Internet. It's for both a website or brick-and-mortar stores, and you pay no corporate or income tax. Your employees pay no income tax. And these merchant account providers I talked to, they admit we have mostly foreign customers, and Americans like you don't want to use us. You want to go to the Canadians. So, I mean, if we all did it, well, they would lose a hell of a lot of tax revenue, a hell of a lot of tax revenue. And we're talking like city, state, federal, yeah. And so it's all about internationalism that ultimately brings down the government. The fourth thing is this thing called...
Explain again the point of you said if we all did it. Okay, what was...
Well, I mean, if most of us either work for a business or are a business. And if businesses all use foreign merchant account providers, where you process your credit card, again, it's done over the phone or over the Internet in a foreign country.
So
that foreign country basically...
So you're saying businesses should do that?
Absolutely, because, again, they need a competitive advantage, and it downsizes government, which is a good thing, because they need a competitive advantage. Right now the economy stinks, and I'm encouraging people to do whatever it takes to minimize their tax liability. If they did that, we can keep the money would stay in America. Instead of these companies leaving America, the money would stay in America, where they save a lot of money in taxes by processing their credit cards in a foreign country. And then they spend their money on...
What I found when I used to receive a lot more of those kind of calls, I haven't lately, is it would be callers who couldn't speak English well, who couldn't understand my questions. It's gotten better the last year or so, but how would we get around that?
I'm not quite sure what you mean. You mean like call centers that from people that for technical support?
Yes, right, that kind of thing.
Many of these jobs are coming back. The Indian call centers didn't work out. Many of these jobs are coming back. We are hiring people in America for technical support, mostly because of the language barrier. The wages in India have gone up. The Chinese Indian economies have overheated. So some of these jobs are coming back to America, but they're very low-wage jobs. They're about $10 an hour. But, yeah, for the most part, the jobs are coming back. So the good news is the jobs are out there, but the problem is taxes are so high that people – and the wages are still relatively high. Like, they're trying to increase minimum wage, so that forces big money to go offshore. But foreign merchant account providers, and another big one is overseas trust funds. Like Mitt Romney got in trouble because he had Cayman Island investments. We all had them at one time where you pay no capital gains or dividends taxes when your money is, like, invested in a bank account in a foreign country and you invest in, you know, like the stock market here in America. So between the two, between former channel providers and overseas trust funds, they lose a hell of a lot of money, at least 90% of what they bring in. Then you have the people that don't pay taxes that never get audited, or if they do get tax relief. Now, here's the final dagger to the heart of the vampire. Buried 6 feet under, never to rise from its sarcophagus again. Tax audit insurance. My theory is the only reason people pay taxes, they don't want to be audited. If we know the system's going to collapse where you need your money, it's forced to pay taxes because you need the money to live off of or have a competitive advantage with. Because you're not going to get welfare, food stamps, ED, or whatever. If you lose your job, you lose your business. So it leads to free fall, where we might see free fall tax revenues anyway. But I think the only reason people pay taxes is they don't want to be audited.
I don't know if you know this, but my husband is a CPA, and among other things, does taxes. And so what I think people might ask right now is, how would tax audit insurance work, and how costly would it be?
Well, it's all about risk assessment. Insurance companies are all about risk assessment. They assess that there's like a certain – we know that most people that don't pay taxes don't get audited. And right now the Federal Reserve cannot borrow any more money because they were told by Congress enough's enough. Bernanke cannot borrow more money. So it may be an exponential number of people right now that don't pay taxes have no chance of being audited. But if you still fear an audit, if you pay less than what you think your penalties are – so what happens is you save a hell of a lot of money if you don't pay taxes. And if you do get audited, then the theory is that the people that get audited, they only get 80% of the total revenue of taxwars.us, which is all done. Right, I do it with PayPal purchases, but what happens is they get 80%. So the theory is it might eventually be like the tax, like the Interstate Powerball lottery, where you might make an insane amount of money if you're lucky enough to be audited. So what it does, it inspires more people not to pay their taxes, and it leads to absolute free fall.
Now, I want to make it clear that we agree with following the law of paying taxes, but it's also true that we have inherent problems with our current tax system in the IRS, and one of those inherent problems is targeting 501(c)(3)s and other tax-exempt organizations, and who cost them a lot of money. Now, would this insurance help those kinds of conservative groups who have applied for the status?
Absolutely, because guess who got audited? Me. And this was in the Bush administration days. If you're a conservative 501(c)(3), the IRS will not leave you alone. But they leave the liberals alone. That's the problem. So, I mean, technically, like right now I'm starting new foundations where I'm not going to apply for a 501(c)(3). I'm just going to process credit cards in a foreign country. And whatever, if I do make money, like, for example, the Amazon book, the money's reported to IRS. So what happens is I just get tax audit insurance with my own company, or I could buy tax audit insurance for someone else. And it's all legal. I mean, see, let me explain the law on taxes. Now, tax fraud means you falsify what you make on a tax form. Tax evasion means you don't fill out a tax form. Go ahead and do it, but do not give the government any money. There's no such thing as an automatic audit. It almost never happens. IRS cannot control a country of 330 million people, and if they can't borrow money from the Federal Reserve, if they're not getting tax money, they're going to have to lay off a lot of tax auditors. It leads to an exponential decay of the number of audits they can do. Well, you're probably not going to be audited anyway, but if you are, better yet, you win a lot of money. So I think it guarantees that we're going to privatize the government out of existence.
Now, I know that you said somewhere in the information that you sent me that you don't know why this insurance has not come up before, but I'd like you to share with us kind of what prompted you with this idea and to make sure people would know which site exactly that they could go to get this insurance.
TaxWars.us. If you go to TaxWars.us, it actually says lotteries. What is it? It's also known as the Tax Evader Lottery. You can check out the page there. The home page of TaxWars.us is a summary of the six ideas I gave you about why for a number of reasons they're looking at free fall and tax revenue. So people can check out that website, and I do encourage people to do what I do. Again, necessity is the mother of invention. There's a necessity to put people back to work in the private sector economy and downsize government. So people could check out this website and have similar websites where if we all sold tax on insurance, did some press releases, get it noticed, this is going to go viral because right now nobody really knows what I'm doing. I've had this book and this website since October of last year. And right now I'm on the verge of getting a lot of money for an advertising budget where it will go viral. It's the kind of thing where if people know that there are ideas out there that are basically going to guarantee free fall of government, then what happens is it becomes so controversial that it might become a 6:30 news item. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But the audience listening right now should pay attention because this is only my third interview. And I've done very few interviews in the years since. Like with the Minutemen Project, I did interview with major players like Wall Street Journal, Alex Jones, George Putnam. But now what I'm trying to do is, with a limited budget, try to reach out to as many broadcasters as possible to try to get the word out that they're looking at much lower tax revenues no matter what they do, even if I never get known. So what happens is if there's an immediate need to cause people to, you know, to minimize their tax liability and just spend in the private sector where we can create jobs, higher wages, lower inflation, lower interest rates, put people back to work. We can do this ourselves. We don't have to wait for the politicians.
Now, you and I both live in California, so we have watched this happen in our state for the last 30 years, watching the Democrats take over the state, and now they totally control the legislature in Sacramento. So they're virtually doing what they want, and they've sent most of the major businesses out of California by overtax and overregulation. So we do have a free fall of our economy here in California, and education is short money, the cities are short money, everybody's short money, and now we have a Democrat in the White House who seems to be following the similar plan. And I don't know if you all remember, as California goes, so goes the rest of the nation. We used to say that when the economy was good or whatever, but now it's bad. So I don't know what party you are, and that doesn't matter to me. But the point is it going to be possible to turn our economy around, or is it such free fall set in motion that it would be years to correct? Questions in that, but...
Well, the thing is, the Federal Reserve is the most powerful organization in the world, and somehow it all needs to trickle down from feds to states, the counties to cities. So, I mean, even here in California, I just throw my vote away on the Libertarians. What I do, I do have a history of voting Republican, but what they're doing right now in Sacramento, they have more than a 2/3 majority of Democrats, where they can increase taxes anytime they want. But in the long run, again, nothing's more portable than the rich and their money. They just go somewhere else. But, again, in the old days, that meant physically move. Now the money moves on the Internet to where we have, if people catch on to this idea, we have ways of minimizing our tax liability where we don't have to worry about what they do in Sacramento. Technically, it's not their fault. It's our fault for paying the taxes. There really is no legal requirement to pay taxes. All they can do is audit you. But then, again, it's legal to go ahead and use foreign merchant account providers and overseas trust funds. And there's nothing that, and even in Ottawa, you don't, your taxes might be reported, your income might be reported to Ottawa, but they don't even collect taxes in that foreign country. Much like with overseas trust funds, the Cayman Islands, number of countries, they charge no taxes. So, I mean, we can all do it. So, technically, we all have a responsibility to minimize tax liability that a lot of people didn't know about. Because even if we work for someone else, you have a responsibility to go to an employer and say, did you consider a foreign merchant account provider? We can have a competitive advantage over other businesses in a really tough business climate where we can downsize government and we can basically put people to work and thrive as a business.
You may very well be right because you've been studying this for years and really have your ducks lined up in a row here, but I just want to say a little disclaimer that if you follow any of this process, that's your choice, and be sure to look up a good, well-known attorney and CPA to help you with doing it correctly and legally. Okay, go ahead.
It's perfectly legal. What people don't realize, the only thing they criminalize is tax fraud, tax evasion. And that means falsifying tax forms or not filing a tax form. But there's no legal requirement to physically give the money to the government. All they can do is audit you. People have reasons, because what happens is people get tax relief all the time. If you listen to talk radio, all they talk about are tax lawyers and tax CPAs that will get you tax relief or you pay no penalties. Depending on what your situation is, if all your money is in overseas trust fund, it doesn't matter how wealthy it is. You are, maybe you have a reason because of business expenses, why you can't afford taxes. So you can get tax relief and not have to pay a penalty. You're probably going to keep a lot of what you otherwise owed before, if you do get audited, but a lot of us don't get audited. So it's the kind of thing where, to some degree, I kind of shame and ridicule people for not minimizing their tax liability. It's a very bad idea, because you need that money to have a competitive advantage to survive with. And I don't care how wealthy you are. I mean, Donald Trump, he was $1 billion in debt at one time. So, I mean, even the wealthy, you know, there's no such thing as security. I don't think the wealthy any more than the poor have an increased obligation to pay their taxes, because I just expect them to put people back to work and spend their money so that the private sector economy can thrive.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break again here, so please stay tuned. And we don't have any call-ins yet, so please call in. This is a good time. 1-877-497-9937. Again, it's 1-877-497-9937. This is a good opportunity to talk with Jim Wood, the founder of Minuteman Fence Project, and he's also the author of The Anarchist Manifesto, found on Amazon.com. And here you can find proof of the inevitable doom of government, according to Jim, because of tax, audit, insurance, and other tax loopholes that lead to the privatization of all government services and a more peaceful world. So again, please call in. We'd like to hear you ask questions. 1-877-497-9937, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Diane Lenning, your host, and we're interviewing Jim Wood, a brilliant physicist with a lot of great ideas and a track record for items he has already invented. And even though I have a college degree and a JD, et cetera, my head is whirling, so maybe yours is too. This is all such good information, and I just want to share a little bit to give Jim a little break here, that the book he's written, The Anarchist Manifesto, has a chapter that talks about the easy ability for individuals to avoid paying taxes because of money moving on the internet, foreign merchant account providers, overseas trust funds, tax-exempt foundations, and other ideas, along with his invention and tax, or which he calls tax audit insurance. And it's difficult to say, he says, why tax audit insurance has not been invented earlier, but with $17.2 trillion in federal government debt and the Federal Reserve told that they cannot borrow more money, these are ideas are likely to cause free fall of tax revenues once the world public is educated and the misery index, unemployment, inflation, and interest rates will fall, and even those who are unemployed may come out ahead, that's interesting, because of more charity and insurance benefits. Government agencies give way to foundations, and entitlements give way to insurance companies. He says privatizing all government insurance or services, I'm sorry, government services means much cheaper and better service. And civil libertarians win on the kinds of laws that remain enforced through criminal arbitration. Anarchy forces people to be more responsible, and war, crime, and poverty largely go away. Oh, wow, you know, with the war on poverty that Johnson had in the 60s, you know, and the Bible says poverty will be with us always. Wouldn't that be wonderful if poverty did go away and crime and war did go away? I know the Bible speaks of that in the thousand-year millennium, but somehow I think Jim is speaking of it with another causative factor there. Yes, Jim, you're back.
It's a good thing you mentioned LBJ and the war on poverty. That actually made things far worse. I think some poverty never goes away, but if you make people dependent, it leads to more poverty, more crime, more drug use. I think if we're all private sector economy, what happens is you wipe out the drug use. You have to be drug tested, get a job. War on poverty create more poverty. War on drugs create more drugs. War on terror create more terror. That's the problem. I think they know that. Government just wants to create dependencies. That's all they do.
Well, they become an enabler, the big government enabler. Makes people be dependent, and look what it inversely, single-family homes with absent fathers, and I worked in the prison system for quite a few years and dealt with a lot of minorities and saw firsthand the devastating effect of this war on poverty on minorities and the black people in specific here, and they, all the ones I talked to, really wanted a good life. They wanted a job. They wanted a good education. I was as a teacher in there educating them. But yet they were like caught in a trap of the syndrome that Johnson had created. Your reaction?
Yeah, that's the thing. What it is that the left-wing white man is the devil. They want these people to play the role of victim and feel sorry for themselves, feel like they are victims, like their ancestors were victims. So it's all about self-victimization based on, which is where entitlements lead you. That's the problem. For the most part, I think that the situation has, the government's created more dependencies. I think for the most part, in many ways, the plight of blacks have gotten better. I think that many have embraced education. Many have. I work with a white collar workforce in Irvine, California. We were about 30% black in Irvine, California, which was quite high. So many do see, I think human beings in general, regardless of race, do seek, they do want upward mobility, but when you have a country where the bottom 47% get money back from the government, that discourages upward mobility. It crosses racial and gender lines, but for the most part, I think the black unemployment rate was the same as the white unemployment rate back in 1999. And then it got a lot worse for a number of reasons. A lot of it had to do with the fact that Bush opened up the border and the illegal aliens stole all the jobs from the blacks. So what happens is, to some degree, government always practices class warfare, race warfare. They know it's all about divide and conquer, where they want to prey into people's resentment of one another, and that's really what this is all about.
Well, how can this issue dovetail with the issues in your book?
I have a website called racewars.tv, which talks about that. Some people may not say it's terribly print the race, but there are many double standards when it comes to racial relations, where, like with the hate crime laws, where it applies to hate crimes apply against minorities but not whites, and so I talk about that a lot. It's in the book. We talk about gender wars. We talk about race wars. I tend to be more old-fashioned because there's something like, it does play into the book, because the book talks about, to some degree, we have, I talk about the disarmament of nuclear weapons and race wars. Like, what does that have to do with anything? Well, to some degree, there's a race war going on between the U.S. and Russia, where Russians are mostly, let's just say they're tribal white people that look at this as a multiracial country, and that's one reason why there's a nuclear standoff that goes off. But of course, for the most part, racial tensions are internalized in domestic society, where it's all about the fact that I think we have a sense of identity. It's not about hatred of the other race, but a sense of identity where we think of ourselves as black, white, or Hispanic, or Asian, as having a certain kind of history that maybe condemns us to a certain stereotype. So it's more about self-victimization than external victimization, where I think we all do it. And to some degree, I talk about that in the book.
You know, as an educator for over 30 years, and I retired a few years back, one of the things I saw us working on so much was for the different races to get along together, to get a good quality education, and to become more like the melting pot rather than the salad, because the melting pot to me can, and I've been very happy to see a lot of minorities, like Herman Cain has recently this week stated it again, that he's an American first. And I think that somehow if we could focus on that, that we're all Americans first, and show what is our American culture and what are the things that make us American and how we can each reach that American dream, because the opportunity is available to all. It's that some are just not aware of the opportunities or how to access them, but they're there, more so in California probably than any other state, yet we have still a high degree on welfare who don't access what is there, such as community college is a very inexpensive way for almost anyone in California to get an AA degree, 2 years of college, and then to step upward to a four-year degree. Yet a lot of minorities who do start it can't seem to pass the test or make the grade and have to drop out. And so we still have to work with this issue of making our young people and minorities aware of what's available to them, and then helping, like, show the way and give them some kind of moral support and adult support. And that's not always money. Sometimes it is. But this is a real difficult issue that I see currently being used, a wedge issue between the people in America. And I think it's something we need to work with together.
Yeah, that's the thing. The progressivism, was not just about, you know, progressive income taxes or taxes and redistribute. A lot of it is about practicing class warfare, where people are given entitlements based on the exploitation of their ancestors, and that created expectations and dependencies. So, for the most part, I think affirmative action has been a miserable failure. There may have been some successes. It's not all cons, it's some pros, but ultimately, technically what happens is it's all about tax money. If they don't get our tax money, they can't create entitlements based on race, religion, creed, national origins, gender orientation, it's all about divide and conquer, where they're trying to pit us against one another. So what happens is the money, for the most part, money is green, even though people are different colors, but the money's green, and it doesn't discriminate. Opportunities, I think, abound for everyone, where even, because I know for the most part, many disadvantaged minorities are forced to resort to blue-collar jobs, but again, I had to work blue-collar jobs myself as a white man in high school, college, and worked my way through college, I'm willing to work a blue-collar job now. I worked for many years as a software engineer, and the economy's so bad, I thought about taking a job as a truck driver, because I got to the point where I just couldn't find work, although right now I think what's going to happen is I have a settlement coming in where I can probably just promote this book, promote the podcast, and try to make money as a .com guy. But to some degree, I think as human beings, I think technically we're, you know, inside we're all, I don't know why we have a sense of identity based on skin color. I don't know what that's all about. There's an element of, if you get rid of the power, and the power wants to somehow divide and conquer by creating resentment and a sense of entitlement based on the disadvantage of your ancestors, then if you get rid of that, and it's all about the tax money, get rid of the tax money, then to some degree we can all compete efficiently in a private sector economy that really does not discriminate. But the government is horribly racist. The public sector is horribly racist. I don't know who it was. It was a proposition from 198 where we had to end racial quotas for government work, and they tried to find a way to get around that anyway. So for the most part, the public sector is rule. Everything about it is evil.
Now, if we have a declining tax base and we have a scenario where the government is shrinking because it doesn't have money, however, there are a couple of things that could happen. They could continue to keep borrowing money, but say it does reduce the robustness of the economy, will our economy survive? What will people do for livelihoods? And how could we turn it around? You've come up with a solution for the fence and some other things. So help people understand, and I'm segueing into privatization, I hope.
If you look at it from the standpoint of domestic economy, it's all about, does the money go offshore, does it stay here? It's really quite simple. Many companies like Burger King, Yahoo, eBay, Google thought they had to physically go overseas. If they keep the money here, with my suggestions on how to minimize tax liability, then what happens is the economy gets a lot better. It's really quite simple. Yeah, what's going to happen is they're going to lose a lot of tax revenue, which is good, because I have nothing good to say about the public sector. But the thing is that if people minimize their tax liability and stay on American soil, I think a lot of it has to do with the Internet making a comeback like we did in the 1990s, where the second industrial revolution was Internet-driven back in the 1990s. This one could be Internet-driven too, and it's not just about minimizing tax liability for those of us who make money on the Internet and don't pay taxes. A lot of it has to do with the fact that there are all kinds of fascinating ideas on how to sell advertising space on websites. With this application I do, OIO Publisher, we can offer cheap, good advertising with high page rank. One of the theories I had why the dot-coms bombed back in 2000, there was a limitation of advertising space. What happened was we had to spend more per click or impression, the rank higher, and as a result, profits and return investment went way down. What we do with OIO Publisher is just the opposite, where the more you spend, the less you spend per click. So I think on the Internet, we can attract big money advertisers, and that would greatly facilitate a third industrial revolution, which is Internet-driven as well.
Now, you said that we could keep our businesses here and strengthen our domestic economy. However, it seems to me, from what I've observed, the economy kind of lends itself for businesses to go overseas because of regulations, et cetera. Now, I know you have talked about a lot of this, but could you develop it a little bit more about how companies could stay here, and could we possibly bring back more manufacturing here?
The manufacturing is coming back to America. I've looked at the United States, where you have places like Texas and South Carolina, North Carolina that are doing well, and California and New York, not as much. It's all about blue state, red state for the most part. So California, again, the politicians are not the answer. I think California will always vote to the left, but again, it's technically, I don't make politics really about who you vote for. I make it all about what we do to minimize tax liability. And to some degree, the problem with California is, to some degree we can legislate when it comes to getting rid of the regulations, because they know that's right. It's not just about the taxes. The fact that, like, if, for example, to put up a fast food restaurant in California, it takes about a year just to get an environmental study approved. So, but again, if they lose money, if the EPA loses money, then they have less enforcement power. To where what happens is, if they know they're going to lose money, if the EPA loses money, then what happens is they won't be able to investigate as many people. When they'll have to loosen up in terms of how quickly they allow you to put up a fast food restaurant. So, I've heard all the complaints that California is probably the most business unfriendly place in the world. But to some degree, we can fight back. We don't have to wait for the politicians. You can file lawsuits to some degree, but which is fine. But the jobs are coming back because right now the Chinese and Indian economies are overheating.
Now, if you would like to contact Jim, you can contact him via email, jimwood072064@gmail.com. Or call him, 949-264-6028, and he has said he is interested in doing other interviews. And if you'd like to mail information or inquiries, you can address that to 100-100 Flor de Sol, F-L-O-R, space D-E, space S as in Sam, O-L, to Rancho Margarita, California, 92688. We are going to take another break, and then we'll come back for our last segment with Jim. And we are so honored tonight to be able to interview Jim, who is such an intelligent person. I think that we can really benefit by hearing what he has to tell us. And I'm hoping that you will share this with your friends around the nation and around the world. And I'm wondering, I hope you won't mind, if you'll let me play a little religious song. If it offends you, I'm sorry, but I don't think it's too offensive. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Thank you.
He knew me then, he knows me now, and he died for me. He loved me then, and he loves me now. Oh, how can it be? He knew the place I would be today. He knew me then. He knows me now. And he loves me. Some people say he died one day, but that was long ago. Well, I'm sure that he was a very good man, but me he did not know. Well, listen, my friend, What I say is true, that he knew me, and he sure knew you. He knew you then, he knows you now, and he loves you. He knew you then, he knows you now, and he died for you. He loved you then, and he loves you now. I know it's true. He saw your face. He knew the place that you would be.
Well, my friends, we're talking tonight with Jim Wood, author of the Anarchist Manifeston.com, and I can't tell you how thrilled I am to have been able to talk with Jim tonight, and I'm looking forward to seeing what develops from all his great work, and I hope all of you will keep your eye on him as well and help where you can. Of course, just personally, I'm really interested in that border fence being completed and any of the technical support that he has shown great knowledge about, and the tax insurance. I hadn't heard of that before he mentioned it. So I think it's really good information for many of us to think about and research and look at these websites we've mentioned. Again, if you want to listen to this again to get all of the websites that we've stated, you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Diane-Lenning. And if you lose sight of his information, you can always email me, diane@lenning.com, and I can put you in contact with him. That's Jim Wood, and I am going to suggest that he talk the last few minutes about anything that he wants to share and just sum up the whole interview in maybe about 10 minutes. Okay, Jim?
Very good.
Thank you. All right, go ahead.
What I want to do, I'm trying to promote the book and the websites and the podcast. I am on, I come on at 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. The goal eventually is to be on until 10, but I'll probably, for right now, I just do a half-hour show. So for people listening, if you go to Blog Talk Radio, it's blogtalkradio.com/James Wood. I believe it's James Wood, too, so I got to get it right. Well, if you know, I don't know, but just look up Anarchy Talk with Jim Wood in the search engine. And again, it'll come up as one of the live shows as far as when you look up shows at 7 p.m. Pacific time. And I'd love to have more callers on the show because I want to take a lot of phone calls and talk for up to 3 hours. There is a chance to have a dialogue for a very long time. I just want to take phone calls, and eventually I will have professional guests. We can have Diane on the show, and we can try to expand the size because this is obviously a very, very, very fascinating subject.
Yes.
Where I want to try to inspire as many people as possible. The goal is to have a large enough audience where you have critical mass, and then somehow this all goes viral, because this imminent collapse of government thing, it's already been, Ron Paul's the only guy that makes sense. He talks about it. They talked about it when the fiscal year ended last year, and we have another fiscal year that's about to end. So, again, you have to pay attention to the news. They are talking about lower tax revenues, so somehow it leads to a chain reaction where they know it's going to lead to free fall. They do this thing called linear regression, where they assume like a 5% loss in tax revenues every year. So in 20 years, we have no government. I think it's going to be a lot sooner than that because it's never linear. It's somehow the old if it rains, it pours theory, and I think there will be exponential decay. So you need to read this book and be a part of my website. If you go now, the mother website is anarchistswhoobeythelaw.com. Anarchists with an S, whoobeythelaw.com. There's an opportunity there to advertise, donate. I'm trying to start a political party called the Anarchists Who Obey the Law Party. We are quite serious about winning elections. You can donate money there to further my political campaign and efforts to run for U.S. president, and where many of you and others have a chance to run for office as people that want to basically get rid of all the taxes, get rid of all the tariffs, get rid of all the fees, get rid of all the fines. Go ahead and turn all the bureaucracies to the foundations, turn all the entitlements into insurance companies, sell public land in order to pay for pensions. And then we, as politicians, we are nothing more than legislators. And I think ultimately civil libertarianism wins. Where what will happen is we'll just be in the legislation business and take the stress off politicians when it comes to running the budget, which only gets them into trouble and only makes them less popular. So you can privatize everything government does, privatize the politicians. So anarchistsobeylaw.com, check out that website. There's an option for you there to advertise on the podcast and the website and donate money and check out my political referendum. I think you'll find it quite interesting.
Well, Jim, this has just been an awesome time. I'm so glad you gave me the opportunity to interview you. It has really been enjoyable to me. As you can tell, I love politics, and I have a little smithering of just about everything in my background. In fact, my first major was social sciences, which is basically all of civilization. So this has been very informative, and you've given us websites to research other information. And I hope all of you enjoyed this as much as I did. If you did, email Jim and let him know at jimwood072064@gmail.com. And you can email me as well at diane@lending.com. Thank you so much, my friends, for being with us. And we'll look forward to you joining us in our future broadcast. And if you are someone who would like an interview, as I did tonight, just email me at diane@lending.com, and I'd be happy to interview you as well. I don't usually take a position. I allow the one interviewed to speak your views because I strongly believe in the Constitution and freedom of speech. Bless you all, my friends. Take care. And good
bye
night.
Now.
Until later, this is your host, Diane Linney. Good night, Jim.
Good night. Thanks, Diane.
Thank you. Good night, my friends. Bye-bye.